Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.
Welcome to Stone Cold Strohs. I'm Brandon Strange alongside Charlie Palillo and Sports Talk 790's Josh Jordan. You can follow them on X at Palillo and at Josh Jordan SCS. On today's episode, Houston takes two steps forward and one back as they win just their second series of the season, but can't complete the sweep versus the Rockies. It's also Brown versus Brown. I'm rooting for Brown. And Ime's not endearing himself to H-Town, but how much is lost in translation? We're going to tell you what we think. Charlie, Josh, welcome in. I guess the good news was that Houston was able to pull out of that nosedive at home, winning 2 of 3 from the Rockies. Bad news is it was close, and it was the Rockies. 2 of the 3 games were essentially bullpen games, which seems unsustainable for this team. What were your takeaways from the series against Colorado?
Well, winning a series means it's not a failure. First time this season, we get the example of, yeah, but if you take the first two, then you lose the third. you feel like you didn't quite squeeze all the juice you could. And Brandon, as you said, it's the Rockies. So it nets out. The Astros finished 2-4 against the biggest laughingstock franchise in baseball. The Rockies lost 119 games this season. They may be a bit improved. So what, this year they'll lose 105? The Rockies are horrible. And the Astros dump the season series to them. We're still in the relatively early stages of the season. The 20-game mark, just into the second inning, if you will. But the first inning was a stinker. The offense overall statistically overachieved for a while. What goes up generally does come down, and vice versa. The Astros offense has been terrible now for just about the last week. The last two games of the Seattle series, scoring one run and then two runs, and then against the Rockies. Okay, it wasn't in the thin air of Denver, but the Rockies pitching staff blows. Chase Dolander, who looked like Nolan Ryan against the Astros in the finale, his career ERA in the majors is like 650, though he is a well-regarded prospect. Anyway, after the offense went to sleep the last two games in Seattle against the Rockies, yeah, they scored 7 in winning the opener. 5 of them were unearned runs, so they deserved, if you will, to score 2. Then they won the middle game 3-1. And then the finale, they score 2 runs in the bottom of the first inning and don't scratch again. Runners in scoring position against the Rockies for the series. The Astros 5-29. That's a 172 batting average. Been down that road plenty of times the last year plus. So Jordan can't do it every night. The one guy I want to shine a little spotlight on. Now, there are plenty of credentialed hitters who still have appalling numbers at this stage of the season. But hey, Isak Paredes, you need to get with it a little bit. Or Joe Espada is going to have to get him out of the 3-hole. You can't have the guy beyond Jordan just doing nothing. He drew a couple of walks in the finale. Paredes, Mr. Plate Discipline. He's not getting very many good swings at all. He's going outside of the zone some. So, all right, it's just 20 games, but an OPS of sub-630. He's yet to find the Crawford box or any other box beyond the outfield wall so far this season. If your 3-hitter stinks, that's a problem. Of course, the issue then becomes until Jeremy Peña gets back and presumably Altuve drops down to the 3 spot. Who do you want hitting third? I'd vote Christian Walker, though he started to taper off a little bit. Correa's not swinging the bat very authoritatively. So it circles back to that for the big picture, Paredes needs to produce in the middle of this lineup.
Yeah, Paredes and Correa, they're not doing a whole lot right now. They have 5 extra base hits on the season for Correa, only 4 for Paredes. Put it in perspective, Jeremy Peña has 4 extra base hits in 10 games. Christian Vasquez has 5 in 8 games. I know that's an outlier, of course, but it's just showing you that, and I know Correa has a decent batting average, but you're just not seeing the thump that you're hoping for. And I'm with you, Charlie, on Paredes. He's got to get going. And the other one, I know he's been a punching bag, but Yiner Diaz, 0 for the series in his 2 games, no hit. And it just kind of bothered me. I know it's not a big deal, but the last inning, he grounds out to second base, and he just jogs down there. Like, I see mall walkers move faster than this guy. And I'm like, it's the last inning. They could kick the ball. Then you have somebody on base. I understand you don't want guys pulling hamstrings, just running balls out for no reason. But when it's the last inning, you're coming down to your last couple of bats, give me a little bit of hustle there, especially when you're giving us nothing with the bat. Overall, the pitching looked better. Ryan Weiss, not that great, but he was better as a starter than a reliever. The 4 walks, you can't have that. Nice to see Abreu starting to show some positive signs there. Spencer Arrighetti might be able to give you something with a pitching staff that's dealing with a lot of injuries.
To follow on Yiner, that 9th inning at bat Wednesday or Thursday night was his best at bat of the game. And he meekly rolls out, chasing a pitch well off the plate. Well, he did that his first at bat and rolled into a double play, got blown away, strikeout his 2nd at bat, and then went out of the zone, striking out in his 3rd at bat. I don't think you need an exit strategy yet with Yiner Diaz, but he damn well needs a better strategy in the batter's box. He's a broken record of undisciplined performance. I mean, you can't drop him any lower than 9th in the order. Right, he's been going down and down and down. He got to the 8th spot. Well, he was in the 9th spot on Thursday. Christian Vasquez is not a good major league hitter, right? The track record's clear. But he's on a nice little run. Squeeze the milk from the cow you can while it's there. Vasquez should be catching every other game, not just be the personal catcher for Imai, especially since Imai is now gone. And a reminder, the Astros AAA catchers are 35 and 30 years old. So Walker Yannick's starting to work his way up, but doesn't figure to be in the picture at all until 2027, unless he goes nuts during the course of this season and ramrods his way toward the major leagues. But Yiner, who has shown improvement with his challenges behind the plate, his judgment in the batter's box continues to suck.
Speaking of challenges, Altuve wasting that challenge on a pitch that I mean, it was obvious that it looked like a strike. Even Altuve, after he kind of did his little tap, was kind of talking to the catcher like, yeah, that was probably a strike. That really hurt because once they were out of challenges, the Astros were getting a lot of pitches called on them well outside the strike zone, like outside at the knee, where they couldn't do anything about it. And once that happened, they had to start expanding the strike zone and start chasing. And one more quick point. Why do the Rockies have multiple guys they can bring in that throw 100 miles an hour, but the Astros have 0? Just something to put out there.
Yeah, and it's not for lack of quantity of throwing pitchers out there because, like I said, 2 of these 3 games were essentially bullpen games because you're not able to go deep with your starters outside of Arrighetti, which we should mention was the bright spot, going 6 innings, 100 pitches, basically like what 1 of 3 quality starts you've had for the entire season so far. So shout out to Arrighetti, who did kind of come in and provide some really important length for this team. But I'm with you guys. I want to give a spot of some credit for at least understanding some of these situations. You mentioned Yiner getting dropped down to the 9th, deservingly so, but then also he's moved away temporarily from Abreu in the closer spot in favor of De Los Santos. So we're seeing some things, and I wish they were for better reasons, but obviously a lot of things aren't working right now. So I give a spot of credit, but Josh, I just want to make sure I want to get you on record for this. Charlie says he thinks Vasquez should be catching every other game. Where are you at with that?
Did anybody think maybe pinch hit him for Diaz in the game, in the finale, maybe? Yep. Sometimes, you know, baseball's funny. When you're hot, you're hot. You roll with the hot hand sometimes, and Yiner's going through it right now. So I have no problem with, until Vasquez cools off, you know, you're getting a better defensive performance back there from him. So, yeah, give him some more opportunity.
Yeah, we've seen him throw out runners the last few times that he's gotten a start. I want to take a minute for StoneColdCruise.com. That's where you get in contact with Nat Lapman at Cruise Planners. Nat can help you with more than just cruises, but cruises are where he is so clutch in saving you hundreds of dollars versus booking yourself. He's got five-day Caribbean cruises for two starting under $1,000, seven-day Alaskan cruises for two with unlimited food and beverage package, including airfare and transportation to the airport. You can get that for $4,600. Cruises just check all the boxes, whether it's shows, water slides, pools, slots, table games, adult-only areas, buffets. And the best part, again, is Nat's exclusive deals and perks that save you hundreds of dollars versus booking it yourself. His service is free and his low prices are guaranteed. That means if you book your trip and then the price goes down, your price adjusts too. Nat can give you more details on that, but just go to StoneColdCruise.com to get started, fill out the form, or call him or Jenny directly at 281-892-1150. Make sure you tell him you heard about it on Stone Cold Stroh's. Now, we've talked about on the show, Dana Brown, Astros GM, just seems to sometimes just say some things. He kind of likes riffing on things, you know, like jazz on certain topics. And much like jazz, it's not for everybody. And Hunter Brown didn't seem to be a fan of Dana's latest improv sesh, where he mused about Hunter Brown's injury and perhaps that it correlated to him throwing too hard too early in spring. I know they get asked questions, and I know you want them to be transparent and open, but is it a bad look when your GM just is kind of openly pontificating and riffing on why he thinks his ace is injured, especially when it seems like he really hadn't expressed that opinion to Hunter Brown?
When your team's 8-12, for sure it is. There's a balance to be struck on this, and you touched upon some of it. I appreciate candor. I appreciate the ability or willingness to speak a little bit off the cuff. Not everything needs to be scripted or talking points or so buttoned down that I don't need you to tell me 2 + 2 = 4 and water is wet. Give me a little bit more than that to work with. But time and place, certainly poor form to basically cast an aspersion at Hunter Brown for bringing it too hard too early in the spring. And you know what? Since it happened over a more than one outing stretch of the spring, dum-dum for not having addressed it with Hunter Brown or the staff during the spring. If you're thinking, hey, why aren't you dialing it back a little bit? We're just ramping up to the cause, to the start of the season. So, you know, as Dana Brown acknowledged, you know, he can't flat out say cause and effect. It's fair to wonder. It is. But to do it without having addressed it with Hunter Brown, or, hey, you know, I'm being asked about this or might be asked about this. Here's what I'm thinking. I don't want you to be caught off guard by something that I might say that you could take offense to, as seemingly Hunter did. I don't think this severs the cord between the Astros and Hunter Brown going forward. I don't know if Hunter Brown has an elephant's memory and this is something he'll file away. Not Dana Brown's best moment. But, you know, I don't think it was a high crime either.
I think maybe it's a little defensive. Dana, he kept talking about all the way they went through their medical staff and how they made all these evaluations and improvements in the offseason. Then what happens? All these guys get hurt right out of the gate. Multiple guys where you lose Emi and you lose Christian Javier and you lose Hunter Brown and you lose Jeremy Pena, twice Jeremy Pena. So I know not all that's on Dana, but in the totality of it, here they are again dealing with a ton of injuries. So I think maybe that had something to do with it. But yeah, be proactive if you're worried about Hunter Brown throwing a little too hard too early in spring training. And yeah, I think Hunter Brown will remember that because he's like, really? You're blaming me? What about Javier? What about Emi? Were they throwing too hard too early too? So, you know, Javier's out there barely hitting 90. What's your excuse with him? So who knows what's really the reason that these injuries happened, but they did. And I like the way Dana talks too. Sometimes he just says stuff. He's an optimistic guy. He self-admittedly likes to go with a lot of his pet phrases over and over again, like, oh, he's locked in and we're hitting on all cylinders. You know, take a drink every time he says one of those lines in an interview. You're going to have a pretty nice buzz.
Yeah, I agree, Charlie. Not a high crime, but also not a good moment. I don't love when Dana Brown starts riffing on stuff, because rarely does it seem like he's on the same page with his team. And this is just another example, whether it's something where he's talking about usage of players, it doesn't seem to align with what Joe Espada sees or what Joe Espada is saying, or an example like this. For a team that keeps it so close to the vest on talking about medical injury, I mean, barely we even know what an injury is a lot of times with the players. And for him to just go like, well, yeah, I think this is because he's probably just throwing too hard too early. I mean, okay, it could be that, or maybe Joe Espada left him in too long. I mean, have him throwing over 100 pitches in the first month of the season before he's really stretched out. So, I don't know. It rubs me the wrong way. And speaking of guys rubbing people the wrong way in the media, Imai not necessarily endearing himself to the Houston fans early. And it's a sensitive topic because he is on the IL and he is in a very unenviable fish out of water situation, making some big adjustments from Japan to MLB. And so far, what we've heard about those adjustments is that he's having issues with the ball, the mounds, the travel, the eating schedule, the weather, not having friends because of the language barrier. And I don't mean to dismiss any of those things on merit. However, it just seems like we've gotten a new reason out of every interview. And granted, I think Chandler Rome brings up an interesting point, which is that he's changed translators like 3 times. So there's always something that can be lost in translation in that. So, and while he is on the IL with arm fatigue, and there doesn't seem to be anything wrong structurally, thankfully, there is ultimately nothing wrong with the arm other than fatigue this early in the season. So this is one of Dana Brown's big acquisitions of the offseason. This team's counting on him and a team that desperately needs pitching right now. So where are you guys with this ongoing Imai saga?
This is another one for me that there's a balance, but I understand any fan reaction of, what do you want, your mommy? You're making $18 million, buddy. The ball's not square. It's still round if it's a little slicker than they are in Japan. You had all of spring training. Are you going to offer to rebate the money? And you mentioned lost in translation. Quality Bill Murray, young Scarlett Johansson movie. Geez, 20-whatever years ago now. We have to allow for the possibility of lost in translation, translator after translator, as long as Imai doesn't say, hey, get me Otani's ex. but that the list you rattled off, food and sleep and this and that, and that's probably why my arm is fatigued. Huh? That was a circuitous path to get to my arm is tired after 8 2/3 innings. It's because I'm brooding, or I'm frustrated, or lonely, or I'm not eating at the exact time that I'm. And I thought the Astros had given him latitude to kind of schedule the way he wants. Talk about a bad look. Performance, winning, the best deodorant. So if he gets that arm strength back and comes back and pitches, all right, then it will be the transition phase that he had to go through. But, you know, not being paid the minimum wage to ramp up. He's being paid $18 million. By the way, if he is horrible or his arm remains fatigued eternally, all he has to do is pick up the options, and the Astros are on the hook for $18 million next year and $18 million the year after that. This has a chance to be horrible, but it still has a chance to work out. Yoshinobu Yamamoto wasn't all that his first season with the Dodgers, and injury problems included. He became an ace year two. Roki Sasaki still looks terrible more often than not. You need to give it some time. Nevertheless, he can't get a free pass for 8 2/3. And my arm is tired, and so is my brain.
Well, I mean, he wouldn't be the first Astro lately to struggle joining the team. Christian Walker wasn't great in his first year with the Astros. And we know all the stuff with Jose Abreu. And I mean, this stuff happened. Jesus Sanchez came over to the Astros at the trade deadline. It was just awful. So this stuff happens sometimes. And now look what Christian Walker's doing in his second year with the Astros. He's feeling more comfortable and playing really well. So I think just give it a little time. I think if so many guys wouldn't have gotten hurt all in a row with Hunter Brown and Imai and Javier, and the team wouldn't have gone on that terrible losing streak. Like Charlie said, a lot of it is you're losing games and everybody's not happy about it. If the team was performing well, we probably wouldn't be hearing this. And if your arm's that tired, throw more strikes. Think how many pitches he wastes throwing out of the strike zone. So, and look, I get it, the ball, the mound, all that kind of stuff. But other guys are having to make adjustments too. Weiss coming over from the KBO after being out of, you know, American baseball for years. You're going to have to make some adjustments, and I think he will. It's just going to take a little bit of time. Let's hope it's something small. At least it doesn't sound like a serious injury. Hopefully he'll be back sooner than later, and we'll see how he performs. I'm still somewhat optimistic. The stuff plays. They just got to get him out there on the field and get him comfortable, and that's part of the Astros, right? And Dana Brown was asked about that. What can you do to make him feel more comfortable? It's a partnership. I know people don't like excuses, but it's not all Emi's fault. I'm sure the Astros can do some things to help ease the transition.
In years past, I think we would feel a little bit more comfortable about an acclimation, considering the fact that pitching was always the strength of this team. But as they currently sit with the highest ERA in baseball right now, we probably don't give the benefit of the doubt as much. And while Emi does have time to make it work, because it's kind of his world right now, Dana Brown is on the clock. If Emi doesn't work out this season, could that be the nail in Dana Brown's Astros coffin?
Yeah, a nail, if not the nail. Of course, an expenditure at this level does not happen without Jim Crane's approval and the Daikin partnership. And here's the Astros' real entree to the Far East, where they intend to dig in deeply going forward. Look, the Red Sox signed an at least as equally heralded pitcher years back named Daisuke Matsuzaka. They gave him 6 years, $103 million, and he had one decent half or three quarters of a season, and the rest of that was essentially a fiasco for the Red Sox. A lot of this stuff is high-stakes poker, and nobody's going to win all their hands.
Indeed. Well, Cardinals now come to town after taking two of three from the Guardians. They are in the middle of the pack on offense so far, but have the fourth worst ERA, three ahead of, you guessed it, your Houston Astros. What will you guys be looking for in this series?
This is when the series or the Astros had a failed homestand. I mean, you're getting the Rockies, the worst franchise in baseball. The Cardinals are basically in a full-blown rebuild, though they've been competitive to this point in the season. They have a young slugger named Jordan Walker who's been killing it. He fell on his face as a high prospect the last couple of years. Maybe he's finally finding it. They have another kid named J.J. Weatherholt who's in their infield, who's considered a big-time prospect. But the Cardinals, they're fairly generic, certainly for what over decades has been the reputation and performance generally of the Cardinals. It's rare where basically they're not trying to win this year. So the Astros need to exploit that. However the pitching works out, right? The Astros now never line up the pitching in a series where you're going, ooh, that looks rock solid. So Alexander, McCullers, Burrows, and whatever comes on after that. But you're in your ballpark, you're playing a bad team. If you don't win the series, it means it's a 3-3 at best homestand. But there's a struggle fest going on in the American League West. Right, going to the weekend, the Astros are 8-12. They're 2.5 games out of first place. Right? The Rangers are 10-9. The Athletics are 10-9. The Angels are 10-10. And who's with the Astros at 8-12? The Seattle Mariners. I'm going to predict the order currently of the American League West is not how it finishes up, which is not to say I'm picking the Astros to win the American League West.
They just announced, you know, Peter Lambert is going to start the opener for the Astros. So that's how that's going to line up. He has a 1.84 ERA so far with Sugar Land this year. He's pitched in three games. He started two of them, 14 2/3 innings pitched. So I'm kind of hoping that Arrighetti was dealing for Sugar Land. Peter Lambert's been dealing for Sugar Land. Maybe you can recapture some of that mojo, and then you're going to have McCullers and Burrows in the two games after that. So that's what the pitching is going to look like. Like I said, the pitching has been improving, at least in the Rockies series. So hopefully Abreu, I'm using hopefully a lot because we haven't seen much to make us concrete in these assertions since you mentioned Brandon, they're dead last in ERA, but it does look like they're on the uptick here. They need to get this win. Like, they need to win another series here. Don't fall too far behind. And it sounds like Hader should be back pretty soon. He was throwing a bullpen, getting up to 90, 93. So that's a good sign. I would like to see him back in May, which is only a couple weeks away. I don't think that's too far a timeline. I don't think I'm being too optimistic there. him and Bennett Sousa, getting them back, I think will be huge. So find a way to get this series win against the Cardinals, and maybe Lambert can give you something. I know there were some articles about Lucas Giolito being available. He hasn't signed with the team, but he hasn't been that good if you look at the advanced analytics. So, and he wants a lot of money. I just don't see the Astros going out and signing him. And by the time you ramp him up, is it going to matter? So I think you dance with who brought you, and it's going to be some minor league guys and McCullers and Burrows. And Burrows, just quickly, man, he's eating up innings, but he's given up a lot of hard contact on a lot of fastballs. Like to see him throw that changeup a little bit more.
Hader said this is basically his spring training right now. So are we looking at 4 weeks before he's ready to ramp up to be himself?
Probably about that. And let's remember, if Josh Hader had been here since opening day, he'd have pitched like 7 innings so far this season. The Astros' problem is all the short starts they're getting and the bulk of innings that they're asking to get work from sub-talented pitchers, or just needing too many of those innings covered. Hader, if he's solid in the ninth inning, that's one thing. But you know, if he's healthy from start to finish, what did he throw last season before he was hurt? 55 innings? 60 innings? They need starting pitching to be consistently at least pretty good.
Yeah, and it's hard to know. Like we talked about, we're seeing guys for the first time at the major league level. In some of these cases, McCullers, flip a coin, what you're going to get from him from game to game. But Mike Burrows, come on, dude. This team really needs him to show up, and not just in a eight inning sort of way, like you said, Josh, which is at this point, beggars can't be choosers. And with the league's worst pitching staff, they are beggars at this point. So we will take innings being eaten, but effective innings would be helpful as well. I'm looking for the offense, whether they can heat back up. We talked about it. You're basing a pitching staff that's basically on par with Houston's. So I need to see Diaz do something, or like Charlie said, we need to see more Christian Vasquez in our lives, because I don't expect him to be the savior, but you just need somebody who can have some productive at-bats. And that does not describe Yiner Diaz at this point in his career. Final thoughts before we're out the door.
Cardinals are a team that the Astros should win the series. Of course, it's not some huge upset if you drop 2 out of 3. And in starting the week, they're in Cleveland. And the Guardians, they manufacture quality starting pitching out of thin air. They had a starter take a no-hitter to the ninth on Thursday. That's usually been a challenging stop for the Astros. But at least no one else in the American League West is off to a strong start either.
Yeah, across the AL, you don't see anybody just killing it. So there's plenty of time to get back in this thing. But you need to get your arms around this pretty soon. You can't continue to get swept like this, but they are very up and down. If they get on another streak, they'll be okay, but the pitching's just got to get better. They have that ERA for a reason. McCullers 5.87 ERA, Burrows 6.55. it's not just like one guy has an ERA of 1,000 and he's making all these other ERAs look bad. There's a lot of poor pitching going on right now. They still have work to do.
Yeah, their notorious win streaks of 5-2. I just want to put a cherry on top here at the end. I brought up Christian Vasquez, and I understand that, like, when the team's in a skid, you want to lighten the mood. And so he introduced this home run celly with Yordan wearing what they coined on the broadcast as the homebrero after Yordan's home run. I get it that it's a thing that's happening in the league. You know, the Rockies with their stupid purple pimp coat and the Mariners with their dumb trident after they do a home run. I get that you're trying to change.
Lighten up, Francis.
But also, on the other hand, that crap's corny. I'm begging them, please do not adopt this. I took pride in the fact that the Astros were one of the few teams left that weren't doing some stupid, corny home run celebration. The corniest it's ever gotten was like Bregman staring down the camera. That was kind of funny, but it didn't involve a prop or somebody in a wheelbarrow racing down the dugout. So please, for the love of all that's just sane, don't do it, Astros. I'm begging you. One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video, and if you listen on podcast apps like Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating while you're here. Reminder for Texans fans, be sure to subscribe to our other podcast, Texans on Tap. We're going to be previewing the draft on that channel, so give us a like and subscribe over there and check that out. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. Thanks for listening, and as always, go Astros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.